How are you, Russ?
Good. How are you, Gord?
I'm good. I'm good.
I got a coaching question first.
Okay.
I would ask both of you guys this question. I just touched on it before the break. You got an extra day off, two games off after this game. You got you're 2.5 minutes into overtime, and you've got Mike Weber on the ice. Why not roll your top four D-men for at least the first half of overtime and see where it takes you? Like, what's he doing? What's going on there?
I agree with you, Rob. Actually, this is something that's haunted Mike Weber before, bad plays like this. I don't know why he was on the ice.
Yeah, you know, there's two ways. I mean, first of all, I'll agree with that. I would, because it seems now teams more often, as I said, than not, are scoring in the first 7 minutes, which I love. We don't have to watch triple overtimes anymore. So they're coming at you. Then, particularly on defense, I guess the argument could be is if you show a lack of confidence, plus you let the guy get stiff, then all of a sudden when you start integrating him again after, say, 8-9 minutes, you've got a guy mentally lacking confidence, mentally fragile, whatever.
He's already stiff. He's only played 11 minutes, and part of that was some of that 11 minutes was just then in that overtime. So he's already kind of that situation, and he's two minutes into overtime.
Well,
he's playing.
I know, but you're thinking in the big picture, saying, okay, this is if it goes long, I want to get all my guys involved. I want to give them all a shift. I still would go hell-bent for leather with 4D.
With four guys, yeah.
Yeah, early on. Yeah. You agreed with that sentiment, Russ?
Yeah, you want your best players on the ice in big situations. That's a big, you know, it's a big situation. It's early in OT.
Yeah, must-win situation for them and with an extra day off coming up. So, whatever.
No, totally valid.
Okay, well, you know, we got things to chat about with you, but, you know, I'm struggling today.
Like my old teachers or something. I used to have to stay at the class when I heard that.
Well, no, but it's helped me through my funk. You know, you have prospects, your rankings and radio and players and all that, and I hadn't heard much of the guy that's about to take over my longtime record, my one-trick pony being the youngest general manager in NHL history at the age of 30 back in 1988, so you can do the math. So John Chayka, the age of 26, holy crap, he's killed me. Anyway, Arizona about to name him at 2 p.m. Eastern time, 11 a.m. their time. A very interesting hire when you talk about analytics and the role, and he's only been there for a year. And but he's been a very strong analytics guy for a number of years. A very interesting hire when you get not a veteran seasoned general manager, but you go the prospect route in that category.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I guess they're really going to go full bore with analytics, but I chat with a lot of people about it on and off the record, scouts and otherwise, and I'm still of the belief it's a tool, but you can't rule your whole organization on that, and I still don't think that is going to happen. I think he's going to spearhead that part, but there'll be somebody to run the cap for him. There'll be other things. So I think this is just a facet of it. And, you know, we'll see. It'll be a good case study because, again, we saw teams like Edmonton go heavy into analytics. I haven't seen any real great result out of that. We've seen the Leafs go heavy into analytics. We'll see if that helps. Hasn't really helped yet. I know every year when a team wins the Stanley Cup, there's analytics points to point out why they won, but, you know, it's never 100%. It's probably like 10 or 20%.
Yeah. First of all, I don't think he'll be ruling the organization.
Right.
And by the way, doing the math for Gord's sake, he did the math about his age, I think, as he's referring to. He's almost 50 now, so it's when I do the math.
I appreciate that. I'm like Timo Solani.
Yeah, you are.
I look way younger, ageless. And my hair looks even way, way younger.
And here's another just a little funny side tidbit. When Bruce Bolton, our producer, plugged you on the show on Twitter, you know, he sets everybody up and throws it out there. There's like a pee-wee line brawl as like teeing you up, like your GIF, your GIF thing. Like it says, coming up next, Russ Cohen sports at Sportsology on all things NHL, Stanley Cup.
I saw that.
And there's like peewees beating the crap out of each other. I'm not sure what the correlation is.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. I don't support that.
Some kind of.
I thought it was the top prospective fighters coming out of peewee.
Yeah, I think it was like really digging deep on the prospect pool.
I like it. Well,
yeah, I don't dig that deep.
Okay, well let's talk legit. We talk so much about the lottery and all those things going, but I want to go back a little bit beyond. I want to get to the obvious as well, the top guys and how it shook out. But you've got your new top 30 rankings. So teams. And everyone's sitting there excited about who they could possibly get in the first round. And I'm curious who's hot, who's not, as far as guys that have made moves upwards or guys that have slid a little bit.
Yeah, so like Michael McLeod was a big name a lot of the year. And coming into the under-18s, he underwhelmed a little bit. He was right around ninth on my list, and he's going to drop some slots because he's one of those guys. He's got a lot of tools. He's a big centerman. He's skinny, but they'll all fill out. He's 6'2". But the problem is when he gets into the offensive zone, sometimes he gets there first and then doesn't know what to do with the puck. And I've seen him do that more than a few times, and I know that I'm not the only one who saw that. And that's a little worrisome. You can't do that in the NHL because you've got to be able to think faster and think ahead. So I think it's going to drop him a few slots. Clayton Keller, the kid from the NTDP, I mean, there is a pirouette pass that he made in the under-18s. You didn't even know that he could see a player from the other side of his head. Like, you just the way this kid has hockey instincts, it's crazy. The way defensemen chase him is crazy because, you know, at 5'10", 170, you would think, hey, this guy should get knocked all around the place, but yet he seems to have the run of the ice, and so he's going to move up. He was already at 10, but he is going to move up. Logan Brown's going to move up a lot. Logan Brown was already 6'6", 218, right? So that already boded well for him, and I had a chat with him because I asked him if he sort of cringes if somebody says he's fast for a big guy, right? Because I'm sure people have said that to you, and you've probably, you know, given the stink eye, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Fast drinker.
Simmer's so tall, nobody can see the stink eye.
Yeah.
So he is a fast hockey player, and he actually thinks the game fast. You know, his dad played. He also has a long stick, great wrist shot. And so when he went into the under-18s, he had 12 points in 7 games. Like, he really excelled, and excelled to the point where I had him around 13, and he's definitely in the top 10, and he may go higher than that. And so that's something where – and he's going high on a lot of people's lists. So Logan Brown's definitely moving up. Tyson Yost, same thing. He had 15 points in 7 games, Team Canada's best player. You know, BCHL, you have to sometimes take a second and third look because the BCHL had a good run there with guys like Kyle Turris, and then it stuttered for a little while. Now you got two guys with Dante Fabro and Yost coming in this year, and Yost is tremendous, 6 foot, 194 center. I mean, he's a goal scorer. He's got a goal scorer mentality, but yet he's still a playmaker. He can play both ends of the – he can play every zone. Like, this guy just does everything well. And so originally I had him in around the 15th slot, and he's moving up. He's going in top 10. There's other guys, too, like Chad Chris plays for the NTDP. He looks like a defenseman that has it all there. He's 5'11", 183, really fast, good with the puck, but, you know, in his own end, not great. And so, like, even where Central Scouting had him ranked 53rd, I could see him going, you know, middle to end of the third round because he definitely needs to sort of shore up his defense. Where, you know, Adam Fox is a kid that really has been slowly rising all year. He's not a well-known guy, another American kid. He was ranked around 50th in most rankings. That's where I sort of had him too. And he's a defenseman. He's 5'10". He's 183. He's a really gifted passer, excellent skater, really gets the pucks quickly. He's like that first guy always to the puck. Plays solid defensively for his size too. Really, really, really solid. And so this is a guy that could go anywhere from the bottom of the first or be one of those first guys taken in the second round. He had 9 points in 7 games in the under-18s and really, really shined. And I know some scouts had their eye on him. So, you know, these are some of the guys that are rising and falling. Nothing too major. I mean, unless you talk Sean Day, but that's been going on for a year and a half, right? So,
Russ Cohen with us. I'd just like to point out you started that entire analysis segment with the words, so like. So who you been hanging out with?
I don't know.
So like,
I don't know who made me do that.
It's interesting.
I'll blame somebody.
So like Ross, let's get down to the nitty gritty. Here's the number one question for you today. Well,
okay.
Not necessarily. I'm not boasting. I'm just suggesting. Okay. Number one, Leafs take the guy who can play center. That's Austin mm-hmm. Matthews. Two, mm-hmm. big body on the wing for Winnipeg. Maybe fits their, you know, their strategies moving forward. Mm-hmm. Liney. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the Finn goes third to Columbus. They take the best available player.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Edmonton's fourth. Okay, they need D. I'm assuming they're thinking they might be able to trade for one or two, or maybe there's a mm-hmm. free agent out there. But is there someone worthy along the blue line to move up to number four?
You know, I think Ole Olevi is worthy. I mean, I think he's the best defenseman in the draft. Another Finn, really skates well. Plays a solid all-around game, really good offensively. I think he'll be a one or a two. But does Edmonton think he's going to be a one or a two? That's really the question. If they don't, then they'll take someone like Pierre-Luc Dubois or Matthew Tkachuk or somebody like that and trade for a defenseman. But that's the thing that they have to sort of decide. If I were them, I would just take Ole Olevi because I would say, look.
Or what about just trade the pick?
Why would I trade the pick?
Or no, say trade the pick if you can find an existing defenseman instead of
picking.
Well,
I'll trade one of my other assets like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins or Jordan Eberle or one of those guys for a defenseman. I don't want to trade the pick, though, because, again, if you go and try and shop for a number one, number two defenseman down the line in free agency, you get killed. This is the only way you can get these guys.
Yeah.
And it's the best way to get them. And so that's why I don't trade the pick.
So this kid's worthy of a four pick potentially.
The Noah Hanifin, yeah. Is he the Noah Hanifin of this year?
I think he is the Noah Hanifin, but I think he's even more gifted offensively. You know, Hanifin might be a little more physical, but Yolevi is more gifted offensively, I think. And so, yeah, I think he is the Hanifin. And again, we saw what Hanifin did. I'm not saying Yolevi should step right in and play first year either. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying he could turn into that kind of guy. And so you have to seriously consider it. I mean, again, when you're just talking about slotting, if it's a difference of whether he goes fourth or he goes seventh, it doesn't really matter. If you need the player and you feel in a couple of years you'll get him into the NHL, then you take him in that slot and you don't worry about it.
Just because we went to number four, just curious, with Winnipeg and Columbus benefiting from the lottery, did that change any things in the top three, in your opinion?
No, actually, it's just going to kind of make Yarmo take a lane and have to answer a lot of questions as to why he likes taking Finns, because he's going to say he'll take anybody, but yet he's going to have to take a Finn. And so it'll probably turn into a little bit of a comedy session. But no, I don't think there's going to be any change there, one through three. I think the draft starts at four. I think that's where the intrigue will happen.
And by the way, the NHL draft lottery simulator is still working. So,
you know, I think there should be a mock draft lottery simulator. So this way you put in the top 30 names, and then for the next, you know, few weeks, we could sort of run that through the grinder and see how many times, you know, Yolevi comes up in the top 10 or Matthews even comes up in the top three. And
that's kind of cool.
I know.
You know, what's funny
I'm not smart enough to make it.
Great minds think alike. Great co-hosts think alike, because I was just about to bring this up, because Gord was addicted to it, and it was fun. I did it like three times when he was gone, and it really is. I could see, not 16 times a show, but it was kind of cool. Gord, just for you and for Russ, here you go.
You have. Look at this. Look at this.
Just a little flashback for you,
okay.
Bob Barker.
Oh, we didn't actually get the teams. We know
no,
the teams.
Just warm,
okay.
Warm fuzzy feeling for you guys.
Well, warm
we
fuzzy.
We could fill in the mental blanks there, Gord.
Sounds good. Well, warm fuzzy chat with Russ Cohen. Thanks as always, Russ.
All right, thanks, boys.